we have come to the dramatic conclusion of the second visit of the sons of Israel to Egypt during the famine. It is the second year of the famine. And we know that they came in the first year after the harvest had failed in order to get supplies to get them well into the time of the second harvest period. How they ran into trouble. And they ended up with their brother Simeon being kept in custody until they would come back with their youngest brother, Benjamin, to prove that they were not spies. And how Jacob wouldn't let Benjamin go. And so an entire year, a little bit more than a year, goes by before things are so desperate, he sends his sons back for more supplies with Benjamin. And when we were last together, when we were wrapping it up, the brothers had been taken to Joseph's private residence, and they were worried about this. But soon it became obvious they had nothing to worry about. They ended up being guests of honor to the second most powerful person in Egypt. And they were even being given portions from his special table. And Benjamin especially was being honored, getting tons and tons of little treats sent over to him from Joseph. And so when we closed up our consideration last time, things were just a very happy dinner. Chapter 44 of Genesis. Then Joseph commanded the steward of his house. So he has his majordomo come over. He speaks to him in Egyptian. He says, fill the men's sacks with food, as much as they can carry. Put each man's money in the mouth of his sack. So let's do again what we did last time. And this guy, this majordomo, was involved in that. But then he gives this additional instruction. Put my cup, the silver cup, you know, the special one, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest with his money for the grain. So put everybody's money back in their sacks, just like last time, but add my special silver cup to the youngest one's sack. And so he did as Joseph told him. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away with their donkeys. So they are quite happy. They had arrived, you know, like the day before. They got their grain. They got Simeon. They got a special meal with the number two guy in Egypt. And now they get to go home with Benjamin. Everything is perfect. In fact, it's better than perfect. They're going to have a one-day turnaround. They'll be back home with Dad before he can imagine that they'd be back. So they hardly even wait for the light to allow them enough sight to head out. And so they are gone, and they start making their trip. Now, the city that they're in is the capital city of this time period, is somewhere along the Nile River, right before it splits into its seven daughter streams. So it's a good 2 weeks or so trip back to the Promised Land. The way that they would go, more than likely, is to head northward, follow that river until the most eastward branch heads off to the northeast. And then they just follow the road along that branch, and then follow the coast road up to Canaan, and then cut across to Beersheba. Well, they'd only gone a short distance from the city, so they haven't gotten very far on their journey. The city is right there behind them, well within their sight. Now, Joseph said to his steward, you know, his major domo that is his right-hand guy, up, follow after the men. When you overtake them, say to them, and so he gives him a role to play. Now, the man may not have fully understood why he has to go through this whole pantomime, why he has to go through this whole demonstration. But he trusts Joseph. He's worked with Joseph for a long time. Joseph is, for all practical purposes, the savior of the Egyptian people. They know that. They understand that because everything he said about the seven super bountiful years happened exactly as he said. And now everything he warned about the seven bad years is coming to pass. They've seen two of the seven already. So he trusts Joseph. So here is the cover story he wants him to present. You overtake them, say to them, why have you repaid evil for good? Is it not from this that my Lord drinks, and by this that he practices divination? You've done evil in doing this. So he's going to pretend it's not true. He's going to pretend that this cup, this silver cup that Joseph drinks out of all the time, it's his special cup. It really is. He's going to pretend that this cup gets used for supernatural practices, for divining, perhaps for scrying. Scrying is when you have a container that you put a liquid in, and then you stare into the flat surface of the liquid and you see things. That's what scrying is supposed to be. Cultures of the past, almost all of them have had some form of that. And so the container in which the scrying happens is special. And so they're going to pretend that Joseph knows things like the ages of these very closely placed men and the fact that, he knows that they're the ones that have stolen the cups and things like that, that he knows it because he has access to occult mechanisms like this. He has a tap into the spirit world. So he goes along with this storyline. When he overtook them, he spoke to them these words. And they said to him, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. So they can't hardly believe that they would be accused of this after such a wonderful feast time yesterday. Verse 8 continues, behold, the money that we found in the mouths of our sacks, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from my Lord's house? So they're like, we actually brought back money that you refused to take from us. Why in the world would we take something that doesn't belong to us? And then they make this offer. Now, it's probably Judah that is speaking because he's the heir of the family, but it could conceivably be Reuben, who is still functioning from time to time as the eldest leader of the crew. But here's the offer that's made officially. Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be my Lord's servants. So you can tell from that they do not expect this cup to be found in their little caravan. Verse number 10, the majordomo said, well, let it be as you say. But you'll notice that he changes it from what they said. He's probably following Joseph's script. This is what Joseph told him to say would happen. Let it be, as you said, he who is found with it shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent. So nobody's going to die, and only the one that is found with the property is going to be turned into a slave. And Joseph has made sure that the person that's going to be found with it is Benjamin. So it's the biggest test of all. This is their final exam. Will they cut and run? Will they leave Benjamin, their half-brother, their father's favorite son, their father's favorite wife's only son? Will they just leave him to his fate and run back home and come up with another cover story as to why Benjamin is now gone? Or will they stand up for him? Will they circle the wagons? Will they be his defenders rather than his offenders? So, each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground. Each man opened his sack. Now, these would not normally be opened until they'd arrived back home again. And he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending up with the youngest. This is another part of the script that Joseph no doubt came up with to prolong this. And remember, even though it's not highlighted here in the text, that each man is going to discover his money is back in his sack again. And so that's not going to bode well. So they start Reuben. There's money, but no cup. They go to Simeon. Money, no cup. Levi, money, no cup. Judah, money, no cup. We've got a pattern that's established here. And each one of these men is grieving over the fact that this is not what they expected would happen. And you know what they're terrified about? If our money's here, that cup is going to end up being in one of these sacks. And the farther down the line they go, the closer it comes to being Benjamin. And I have a feeling that every last one of these men is absolutely terrified as each new sack gets opened. And then finally, there it is. The cup was found in Benjamin's sack. And they tore their clothes. Now this is a Middle Eastern sign of grief. You just grab a hold of that outer garment, which is it's actually an item of value, great value. A lot of garments were passed from generation to generation. Yet you are so taken aback, you are so grieved, you don't care anymore about anything, and you just rip that clothing. And so that's what they do. They tear their clothes, and every man loaded his donkey, and they returned back to the city. When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. So normally, of course, Joseph would get up early in the morning, and he would go and do his morning rounds and his morning oversight of the distribution center for foreign nationals. But today he stayed home because he knew that these guys would be back soon. Notice also that Judah is tagged as the leader of the brothers. His name appears in that sense. And so they fell before him to the ground. They are showing great obeisance, humility, begging for mercy, if you will. Joseph said to them, and so here he is, he's still acting the role because he needs to see them pass their final exam. Now, some people might think that he's torturing them. I don't think so. He needs to be certain that these guys are not the same guys they were 20 years ago when they were going to murder him at worst, and they sold him into slavery at best. Spared his life, but intended for him to be a slave forever. And so he needs to know that they're not like that anymore. And so Joseph continues in the role, speaking through a translator. Keep that in mind. What deed is this that you have done? Do you not know that a man like me can indeed practice divination? Don't you know that I can find things out by tapping into the spirit world? And Judah said back to him, through a translator, what shall we say to my Lord? What shall we speak? How can we clear ourselves? God has found out the guilt of your servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also in whose hand the cup has been found. So Judah, speaking on behalf of all of them, says, we are all your slaves. Now, why does he say that? Because what good would it do to go back home without Benjamin? Dad is going to disinherit all of them if he doesn't just have an immediate coronary or take to his bed and die of self-starvation. So their lives are over in relationship to their father, they figure. So they might as well just stay here because they've got nothing. Even their families are going to be ruined by coming home without Benjamin. But Joseph responds through the translator and says, far be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. As for you, you just go up in peace to your father. So he gives them the chance to cut and run, to abandon Benjamin. This is the final exam right here. And then Judah went up to him and said, so Judah speaking on behalf of them all. Now this is Judah, who is the ancestor of David and also the ancestor of Jesus. Judah went up to him and said, oh my Lord, please let your servant speak a word in my Lord's ears. Let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are like Pharaoh himself. My Lord asked his servants, saying, have you a father or a brother? We said to my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a young brother, the child of his old age. His brother is dead. He alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him. And then you said to your servants, bring him down to me that I may set my eyes on him. We said to my Lord, the boy cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. And then you said to your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down to you, you shall not see my face again. So when we went back to your servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord. And when our father said, go again, buy us a little food, we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother goes down with us, then we'll go down, for we cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. And then your servant, my father, said, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One left me, And I said, surely he's been torn to pieces, and I've never seen him since. If you take this one also from me and harm happens to him, you will bring down my gray hairs in evil to Sheol. So Judah's telling the whole story. He's pulling at the heartstrings. That's his intention. He's bearing his soul to this man that he thinks has life and death in his hands, which he does, hoping that he can move him with pity for the father. And then he cinches it all up with this offer, verse 30. Now, therefore, as soon as I come to your servant, my father, and the boy is not with us, then as his life is bound up in the boy's life, as soon as he sees that the boy is not with us, he will die, and your servants will bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. For your servant became a pledge of safety for the boy to my father, saying, if I do not bring him back to you, then I shall bear the blame before my father all my life. Now, therefore, mark these words. Now, therefore, please let your servant remain instead of the boy as a servant for my Lord, and let the boy go back with his brothers. For now, how can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? I fear to see the evil that would find my father. So Judah offers to sacrifice himself. No greater love has anyone than this, to lay down his life for his friends, the people he cares about. Judah has clearly changed. He has passed Joseph's test. He is no longer hateful and spiteful toward his half-brothers of a different mom. He is not going to abandon Benjamin. He would rather be a slave for the rest of his life than to imagine his dad losing another boy that he loves. How can we read that story without being reminded of what Jesus did? That he offered to take our place. And so, chapter 45 begins with this reality. Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. This is the third time we've read that happened. And so he cried in Egyptian, "Make everyone go out from me." Everyone out. Now the brothers don't hear and understand Egyptian. All they see is, and this man clearly becomes very emotional of some sort, and he probably is waving his hands around, and suddenly everybody scatters to the exits and disappears. Moses says, so no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. He wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. So there is so much noise involved in this that the people outside this room can hear him. And it gets passed on even to the household of Pharaoh. And then Joseph said to his brothers, and this would have been shocking to them because he speaks to them in Hebrew. Now, his Hebrew may not be all that clear anymore. He's out of practice. It might have been a little halting because if you've gone 20 years without really speaking your own language, only speaking the language of your adopted country, you might get a little rusty. But he gets the message across well enough that they are shocked. He said to them, I am Joseph. Now, think of the impact of that phrase right there. Is my father still alive? Now, he's already asked this and had it answered, but he needs to know, is it true? You're not lying, right? Is dad still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. They were like gobsmacked. They were taken aback. They were knocked on their heels. Whatever idiom you want to use, these guys would never have guessed in a million years that this guy in the white fancy kilt and the gold collar and the fancy headdress and this position of high authority was their brother. Never. And so Joseph continues talking to them in Hebrew. Come near to me, please. Come here, close. He's inviting them to come up to look him in the face. Because, you know, as we've talked about before, if you've met somebody after many years and they say, do you know who I am? And you're like, no, I'm not sure. Sometimes you can do it on your own, but a lot of times it's because they tell you who they are that you start looking and suddenly you see them in there. You see how the younger version turned into the older version. And so I think that's what he's inviting them to come and do. Come near to me, please. And so they came near and he said again, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. So yes, I'm the one that you thought you were doing in. But here's the reality, and this is where we'll have to break off in a moment. Don't be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. So it's okay, guys. God is bringing something good out of the evil you did.